Hey, it's Dan Patrick. Here's your chance to score with Maaco Auto Body Shop. Join us in San Francisco for Super Week. That's right, a trip for two, airfare, hotel stay, and VIP access to see us do our show. Maaco also giving away 5 free paint jobs and 10 swag bags. Enter daily for a chance to win. Get official rules at danpatrick.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Open to contiguous U.S. D.C. residents 18 or over. Ends 11/23/25.
CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batson. The threat by the People's Republic of China's PLA Army, Navy, and Marines, and Air Force. The threat is to Taiwan. However, the presumption is that when China attacks, Taiwan will not be the only target because of the ability of the U.S. and its allies to strike back. Therefore, we're looking always at what is called the first island chain. That runs from Korea, Japan, the Philippines, south. And it does to the South China Sea. And it includes all the islands that China has now militarized. But all of that describes the challenge for the PLA Navy to break out into the Pacific. However, there is a second island chain. And that now becomes critical because of presumption that the PLA Navy has a plan and a lot of ships and a lot of missiles to break out. What happens then? I welcome Ronan Wordsworth. He is geopolitical futures analyst, a subscription site I urge you to attend, because what we're looking at is, as of yet, a possibility. However, what Ronan is profiling is what is being done about the second island chain running from the Marianas, where Guam is, all U.S. territory, the Northern Marianas, south to Australia, and then west to the Cocos Island and Christmas Island in the Indian Ocean. This is Oceania. It's vast. But from an Australian point of view, it's our front yard. Ronan, the geography is new to me, so if I've made mistakes, please correct me. But what we're looking at is something new, the second island chain to be augmented with military equipment. Let's start in Australia, because the mainland was always the strength of the U.S. Navy during the Second War. What is planned for the Northern Territory and Northern Queensland? What are they thinking? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Thanks very much for having me, John. Yeah, so if we look, like, traditionally, as you mentioned, the thinking around that containing Chinese assertiveness has been around this first island chain. And what I propose is the second island chain, which Australia and the US are kind of combining together to create and basically act as a deterrence against any potential attack. And if we look at Australia in particular, the traditional Australian thinking, and still remains this way, is that our only significant threat to the mainland Australia will come from the north, will come predominantly from that region, that the other oceans are far too vast for any large forces to come logistically across. And so we see traditionally Australia's got a few air bases in the north, and as you say, in Northern Territory around Darwin. And these bases have been in use since Second World War, even prior to that. I think that's where we saw some of the Japanese attacks into Australia during the Second World War. And now those bases haven't really been upgraded significantly and haven't been thought of as part of crucial to Australian security until the last couple of years. And as part of AUKUS, I think this was part of the rethink and reset of the mindset about deterrence and security for Australia. And this was to strengthen these northern bases where there's not a large population center there. However, this is a place where you can easily mobilize into a greater area in the north and support logistically other allies, as well as defend the mainland Australia, be that with long-range missiles stationed in these bases, as well as having upgraded facilities to be able to run different logistics, to be able to operate aircrafts, etc., out of and project your power outside of Australia's direct neighborhood.
So what we're looking at is Australia has the bases in place since the Second War, and they're going to build them up. Is money coming?
Yeah, so as part of the last federal budget in Australia, there was about $3.6 billion Australian dollars set aside for upgrades specifically of these northern bases, including increasing resiliency, but then upgrading the runways, increasing hangar space, increasing fuel storage, all these logistical things which will be needed to be able to operate long-range operations out of them. And then for future works, they've also been requested basically $14 to $18 billion over the next decade, basically for future upgrades of these bases as well. So we see that money going between, especially the Darwin and Townsville bases. But then, as you mentioned in the intro, there some money into upgrading the base on the Cocos Islands, which are very small islands in between, basically Australia and Sri Lanka, if we imagine in the Indian Ocean there. So that those that runway will then be able to accommodate long-range surveillance aircraft and long-range drones, etc. Again, to be able to help with logistics, to help with information, and to overall increase the security profile of the whole region there.
Now, I started with Australia because we can go west to the Cocos or north to Japan. I want to go north here. Papua New Guinea, the Solomons, have been contended by China. It's soft power, its willingness to bribe people and to persuade the government with encouragement, let's put it that way. Are they now still in under some kind of paw because of the People's Republic of China, Papua New Guinea, PNG, and Solomons? What is their status?
Yeah, so if we look, I think we go back about 3 years now, is when China made quite an aggressive push into first the Solomon Islands and then Papua New Guinea and then a few other countries like Fiji, where I feel Australia and the US were a little bit caught off guard by this approach. And what China did was offer some money in development, but then offer troops that could train the security forces there and then integrate with the security forces on these islands. And the most significant was with Solomon Islands, where they actually signed a comprehensive defense agreement, which the fears were that that could enable a Chinese naval base to be set up in the Solomon Islands, which is alarming for Australia, obviously, because of the close vicinity to these islands and the ability for then a potential new angle of threat to come to Australia. That initial approach from China then necessitated some sort of response from Australia and the US. And we've seen, well, particularly in Papua New Guinea, it's been extremely successful. I would say they've come back completely. Now they are very much closely integrated into the Australian security sphere. They do a lot of collaborative work with Australia from Papua New Guinea. And so I would say they definitely make up part of this second island chain, for instance, whereas they even have some of their officers which have become integrated into the Australian Defence Force, which is the first time this has been done with a foreign country from Australia. And I think it shows this increasing level of trust between Papua New Guinea and Australia. Similarly, with Solomon Islands, they still have agreements in place with China, but the new Prime Minister there is much less pro-China than his predecessor. And Australia, again, is now pushing a lot of development aid to Solomon Islands, to PNG, and to Fiji. And this has the direct effect of actually giving them another option, potentially to step away from China. And also, the Solomon Islands' new prime minister was in Australia recently, and his biggest request was basically, we need more resources for policing. Like, we didn't necessarily want to go with China, but then we need some Australian, say, federal police to come and assist with our training. And so I think that shows a willingness, again, to step away from the approach that China had made and come back towards the US and Australia. And I mean, for Papua New Guinea, another quick interesting tidbit is, like, and besides a federal budget emergency last year, Joe Biden was set to visit PNG, which would have been the first time ever that a US president had visited the country, because obviously it's a very small, very poor country on the global stage. But it showed the significance in the strategic thinking of Australia and the US to actually win back some of these countries from the Chinese push.
A final minute. Ronan, what's the mood at home, knowing that these bases mean that Australia is going to be targeted in a conflict? Is the public with this?
I would say it's kind of divided. If we look, there's definitely a fair bit of the public that understands the risks. I would say I think it's a net positive. It acts as a deterrence against a potential attack, against what happened in World War II, where Japan started bombing the Northern Territory, for instance. Whereas a lot of people in Australia don't view security necessarily the same way that I do from the geopolitical lens, because Australia is kind of an isolated nation, and then don't necessarily see the value in the government expenditure in the security sphere. So it's always this balancing act with the Australian public, because the threat doesn't necessarily feel that close at any time.
I understand, but those missiles that China's got can reach 1,000 miles and maybe more. And Australia, Northern Australia, as you say, was bombed by the Japanese, and they didn't have anything like those missiles. Ronan Wordsworth for Geopolitical Futures for the Second Island Chain. I'm John Bass.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it, your neighbors know it. Heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs, in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.